Chapter 26. Then Job replied, "How you have helped the powerless, how you have saved the arm that is feeble. What advice you have offered to one without wisdom, and what great insight you have displayed. Who has helped you utter these words, and whose spirit spoke from your mouth? The dead are in deep anguish, as beneath the waters and all that live in them. Death is naked before God. Destruction lies uncovered. He spreads out the northern skies over empty space. He suspends the earth over nothing. He wraps up the waters in his clouds, yet the clouds do not burst under their weight. He covers the face of the full moon, spreading his clouds over it. He marks out the horizon on the face of the waters for a boundary between light and darkness. The pillars of the heavens quake, aghast at his rebuke. By his power he churned up the sea. By his wisdom he cut Rahab to pieces. By his breath the skies became fair. His hand pierced the gliding serpent. And these are but the outer fringes of his works. How faint the whisper we hear of him. Who then can understand the thunder of his power?"
So good morning, everybody, and welcome. And we're in part 33 of The Sovereignty of Our God, the book of Job. And the subtitle today, because we're in chapter 26, if you want to actually go to chapter 1, that's where we're going to start out. Don't get nervous. So the subtitle is Job's Lesson, Having God is Enough. Having God is Enough. So that's what we're going to see today in the great life of this prophet Job. So today we're continuing really a different phase of our journey with Job, because this starts out a 6-chapter journey, listening to what Job has to say, predominantly in reply to Bildad's final and closing statement that we just went through in chapter 25. But I would also see and understand these next chapters as some of the greatest chapters of the whole book, actually, when we start to see and analyze the content within these chapters. Because what we're going to see is the real heart of Job. Yeah. And his amazing attitude towards God and his understanding of God's sovereignty. Yeah. And we'll also see the depth of this prophet's love for God. It's incredible. So coming up in these next 6 chapters, we will probably see some of the biggest lessons for us in the whole book of Job coming up. We really need to bring this into a very laser-focused vision of what this book is about. You know, we've been through a lot, yeah, in the sense of content in the lives of these three men, these three so-called friends of Job. And there's been many distractions, and we may very easily get distracted as to what is going on, yeah? And I want to bring that back into focus today. And I use the term distractions. Distractions from the very basic tenet of the whole book, yeah? And that's what we're going to touch on today. That, as I say, may have kind of slipped out of our focus. So I'm going to try and bring it back into focus today. That's why I asked you to turn to Job 1. So let me try and bring this back into focus then. So we need to go back briefly, and unfortunately have to listen to Satan again. Yeah. But in chapter 1, verse 8, the Lord's talking to Satan here. And the Lord said to Satan in verse 8, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil." Now, I know we're really well aware of that verse. Yeah, I've probably quoted that verse more than any other verse in the whole book of Job, along with 1:1 and 2:3. Yeah. But the focus for today, I want to be on what Satan focused on. His focus targeted not on what Job's relationship was with God, but rather what was in it for Job by being in that relationship. And we may have just got off that track slightly, but I want us to focus on it today, because it's really a key to a fuller understanding of the whole book if we focus on this today. And that's why I'm doing it. Hence the subtitle I chose today. Job's lesson: having God is enough. Yeah? So let's look at Satan's focus. Look at verse 9. Then Satan answered the Lord, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land." Now look at verse 11. "But put forth your hand now, God, and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." There's the real foundation of what we've been doing the last few months. Yeah. Where was Satan's focus? Satan's focus was on what Job had. And the motivation for Job's relationship and love for God, according to Satan, was only because of what he had. And I brought this out before in Satan's making the first accusation, Satan's first accusation being actually against God, not against Job. You know, he accused him of bribing Job. So he's accusing God of bribing Job here. But bribing Job with what? Yeah. Well, there are 5 points I pulled out of these verses. A hedge about Job, number one. Hedge about Job. That hedge of protection about Job's life. A hedge about his house, and that's relative to his family. It's not necessarily the physical house. So a hedge of protection about his whole family. Thirdly, a hedge about all that he has on every side. And we know what he has. A whole bunch of riches. A whole bunch of... God lists out his net worth in animals. Yeah. Fourthly, a blessing on the work of his hands. And last but not least, number 5, a further blessing on the increase of his possessions in the land. Man, does that sound great? Yeah. So Satan's main point here is, why wouldn't Job love you, God? Yeah. If you're willing to do all of this for Job, of course he's going to love you. But why is Satan bringing all this up? He doesn't waste his time. He's bringing it up for a reason. And we may have missed the reason, but we will not miss it today. So the point Satan's getting at is, and by the way, one of the main points of this whole book is, this whole record, Satan is saying, quote, "God, just allow me to strip Job of all of this stuff, and guaranteed Job will curse you to your face," end of quote. That's what he's saying. But are we really catching on to what he's saying? In other words, Job's faith is intrinsically linked. It's inseparable, right, to all the great stuff that you're doing for him. That's what he's saying. In other words, you scratch his back, and therefore Job is scratching yours, God, through Job's false love for God. That's what Satan is accusing God of, and accusing Job of. Because the only reason Satan is saying that Job really loves God is because of everything he does for Job. Wow. So we should all be asking ourselves the pointed question then. Yeah, the rhetorical question, by the way, as usual. How would my love for God be if everything was stripped out of my life? Good question for every one of us to ask ourselves. Because remember, Job didn't just lose everything that he loved and that was dear to him. He lost absolutely everything. Did you catch that? Absolutely everything, even his health. Yeah. So the big question for all of us is, again, is God enough for us? Or, alternatively, do we also need all the trappings before we commit to God 100%? Man, that is a really difficult question to answer. Yeah. And don't answer that rhetorical question too quickly in your mind. Yeah. Because sometimes we have to face the suffering. Sometimes we have to face the trials before we can ever answer it. And I mean answer it honestly. And by the way, we answer it by our actions, not by our tongues. Answering with your tongue is so, so easy. Yeah. But put yourself in Job's shoes. Is God enough for us? Yeah. So starting out here in 26, we have to keep in mind that now it's Job's turn to address the lies that have been propounded at him since chapter 4. Yeah. And that's what he's starting to do here in chapter 26. And in chapter 4, Eliphaz started out his dialogue at Job, yeah, accusing him, making false accusations of sin and preaching the principle of retribution constantly, over and over and over again at Job, yeah, as they began this kind of futile exercise of unearthing Job's hidden and secret sins, yeah. But do we realize, I hope we do at this stage, yeah, that there is no such thing as hidden sin. And many people think there is. And there are secret sins. No, there aren't. There aren't. If there's one thing that's visible, it's our sin. Yeah. Now, it may not be visible to me. It may not be visible to your friends and family. But we know who it is visible to. The only one that really matters. Yeah. And what was their attitude and stance against Job? Well, Job, if you're suffering like this in this life, it's because you're sinning. Because we all know we reap what we sow. Yeah? And that's their stance with Job. But we have to remember back to what Job did originally reap. And we just read some of it in 1:10 there. Yeah? Remember God? He listed out how financially well off Job was. And after listing out Job's net worth, God then says in 1:3, quote, "And that man," and it's actually, this is by revelation to the writer of the book of Job, quote, "And that man was the greatest of all the men of the East," end of quote. Wow. Then as the record develops, we saw everything being taken away from Job, haven't we? That's been a main thrust of this book. But look, his love and devotion to God is never taken away from Job. Everything's taken away from Job bar that. It's not even diluted in any way. In fact, as we go through this record, his love and recognition of God is intensifying. The more you take away from me, the more my intensity of my love for God increases. Wow. Huge lesson for all of us in this great book. Yeah. So the challenge I want to bring up today is, if this devastation recorded for our benefit, I might add, yeah, in the life of Job, all happened to each of us, would God be enough for us? Would he? Would he be enough for you? Would he be enough for me? What kind of priority do we put on God and our relationship with him? Yeah? It's really, really key for us to get this out of the book of Job. Or, on the other hand, are we fair-weather Christians? Yeah? Or, I'll only love him if he delivers for me. Because in this record, we're seeing God not delivering for Job. Have you caught on to that?
Yeah.
Yeah? He's not delivering for Job. At least not yet. Yeah? And I put the emphasis on not yet. Because God does come through in the end. But not in the chapters we're in. But Job's faith is that even if God doesn't deliver in the present, he will not denounce or curse God regardless of not seeing that deliverance. So Job, he sees God's vast sovereignty. And Job really focuses on that in this chapter, chapter 26. Because I often think about our assembly here, which as I see it, is actually, it's all about our appointment with the Lord. And that's the way we have to see it. It's not an appointment with me. It's not for you to come here and listen to me rambling on for 45 minutes. We can't see this as a social event. It's a catch-up time. No, it's catching up with the Lord and he's catching up with us. Yeah? Because we have to see it in the way God sees it, yeah, and views it as he is in attendance in our assembly. If we have structured it the way he demands it to be structured. And I think we do. Yeah. And if we don't, you're going to let me know how to improve it. So he makes it really clear he's among us when we do it all according to his word. So there's a good reason to be in attendance in an assembly. But I want you to think about if everything was taken away from us, right? Our family, our friends, our home, our cars, plural, our jobs, our health, our finances. Would God be enough? Would he? Would he be enough? I mean, how would you get to the assembly? That's right, Steve. Stick your finger out. Start hitching. I mean, people do that to go to a rock concert. Yeah. I mean, what efforts would each of us go to in order to be a functioning part of the assembly? Yeah. Or are we relieved at times that we don't have to go? I mean, I'm just asking these rhetorical questions because I ask myself these questions, right? So we can confront any wrong thinking I have or you have in each of our hearts. Because when I ask these rhetorical questions, believe me, I'm first in line. Yeah? Because I have the same challenges at times in my mind. Oh, we have to cancel? Oh, well, that means I don't have to spend hours studying the Word and preparing a teaching. That's okay with me. See what I mean? So easy to think this way, and it's so dangerous. Because I don't believe that the Lord is happy with fair-weather Christians. I don't think there is such a thing, only in their own minds. Because we see far too many of them all around us. And in the Bible, have you ever found one? Let me know. I can't find one fair weather Christian, yeah, where everything's honky-dory, everything's running really well, and no issues. It's the opposite, isn't it, when we go into the Word? It really is. I mean, just read Hebrews 11. There's a good one. See if you can find one in that. You know, Hebrews 11:6 says, "And without faith it is impossible to please him." And faith ain't you and I saying, oh, we're faithful. Because you've got to read the context of who this is referring to. It's impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is and that he is the rewarder of those who seek him. Don't miss these last few words. I highlighted them in your notes. So we've seen and continue to see this great example of faith in Job's life. And he has seen total devastation of his whole life. That's what's incredible about this book and this man. But do you recall Job's immediate response to the devastation? Yeah? And complete loss of everything he loved and cared for. Let me read the verses to you before we get into 26 today. Job 1, we're back to Job 1 again. Verse 20. Then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head. And we know what went before this. Total devastation of everything he loved and cared for. Shaved his head and he fell to the ground and worshipped. What? You mean he didn't moan about it? He didn't complain about it. He worshipped God. And then he said in 21, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Wow. And look at verse 22. Through all this. Man, it's so easy to read these three words. Through all what? Well, you got to read the rest of it in context. Through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. Wow. In other words, God is enough. I'm content in God alone. That's what Job is saying. This is the way we've got to be, guys. We've got to come out of the end of this book of Job with this attitude and with this level of faith in our lives, that God is enough. Not all the stuff that we pray to him for, not all the stuff we're so blessed to have in our lives. God is enough. I mean, we got into this whole series on Job because of the Philippians one we were in. Remember that? Because the Apostle Paul, we were reading about him, he's in jail, he's getting whipped, he's getting thrashed. Oh, I'm content. He's what? He's content in it all. We've got to get to this stage of contentment. We've got to get to this stage where God is enough for us, regardless of all the circumstances that we may have. And for most of us, the circumstances are really great. Yeah, probably all drove here with the air conditioning on, or maybe the heater on, not the air conditioning. Yeah, but you know what I mean? We didn't even have to jump on a donkey for a few hours. Yeah? So that's the question I want to pose today. Is God enough? Yeah? Or do we have a list of dependencies attached to it all? Yeah, God's enough if he delivers me of this, or delivers somebody of something else, or, you know, make your own list out what your dependencies are as to whether God is enough. But we have to get to the stage where God is enough. Because if we live long enough, there's a day coming where that might be all we have around us. Yeah. So I think that's one of the main lessons coming out of this great book, where we have to get to the point where God is enough. Yeah. Because everything around our lives, and we've all figured this out, and we figured out pretty quickly over the recent years, is temporal. Yeah. Your freedom and my freedom, to a large degree, is temporal. And we often think it's permanent, yeah, wrongly. You know why we know that? Because we live that way. We put so many other things that are temporal before him who is permanent. Yeah. So Job's response to losing everything was to worship his God. Wow, what a lesson for all of us. And that was regardless of the response of society all around his life. Because have you heard a whole bunch of... Have you signed up for the Job fan club? It's a short list. Yeah. But this is a huge lesson for all of us. And we should have it should have a permanent impact on all of us, and I pray it does. Job now starts in 26 his sarcastic rebuttal. Yeah. Back to Bildad here in chapter 26. So just Watch out now how he uses sarcasm or irony, another term for sarcasm, which is yet another figure of speech. You can look it up in your figure of speech book, which you've got access to. And this is in response to what, or to whom? Bildad, yeah? Specifically, but really to all of them in reality. I mean, I think they're all listening to this. Now, I think Job might have had some Scottish blood, because is there a more sarcastic nation than Scotland? I don't know one, maybe not. But, you know, Mac Job doesn't fit into the text. So we'll leave it alone. And God also uses divine irony. It's coming up in chapter 38 when we get there. Yeah. Do you know how I know that? Because I looked up sarcasm and irony in the Bollinger, and he pointed to Job chapter 38. So it's interesting. We'll get there at some point. So 26:1. Then Job responded, "What a help you are to the weak." Yeah. And this is it's in the singular actually. So I think this is directly at Bildad from chapter 25. But we know they're all listening. "How you have saved the arm without strength." Wow. So Job here is sarcastically referring to Bildad and how Bildad has been of absolutely no help to him. Yeah? Now, who did Bildad perceive as being weak? Who is that? Job. And that Bildad had tried to, quote, save, end of quote, or deliver Job, who again, they all perceived as being without strength. They perceived Job as being weak. Yeah? Was that the reality? Absolutely not. Now, no doubt physically he was weak, but spiritually Job was stronger than any of them. Yeah? That is the truth of the situation. Yeah? Job is a strong person, and Job is the one with all the strength in reality. Look at verse 3. "What counsel you have given to one without wisdom." You've seen the sarcasm. "Oh, what helpful insight you have abundantly provided." Are you kidding me? Again, the irony here was that Job was the one with the godly wisdom. Because do you remember we read 42:7 last week? God himself confirmed that truth. That Job got it right. They got it wrong. Yeah? And it's coming up later as we read it. When we get to chapter 42. Look at verse 4. "To whom have you uttered words? And whose spirit was expressed through you?" The NET Bible has got a note. "Whose spirit has gone out from you?" But what a question Job's asking here. Yeah? Because we all know the spirit that was expressed through all these guys. And it sure wasn't from the true God. How do we know that? Hey, 42:7. Made it very clear to us that it wasn't from the true God. It came from the spirit of darkness. It came from the one we read earlier, Satan himself, or one of his cohorts, one of his devil spirits. So Job's really not holding back here. He's giving it to them right between the eyes. But do you see the perception they have of Job? The wrong perception they have of Job. It was that he didn't know anything about God. Yeah? Whereas Job was the only one who knew the true God. According to him, God, he should know. Yeah? And we know that from 42:7. Not to mention 1:1, 1:8, 2:3. But just look at what Job is focused on. And this is what they were supposed to do. And I marked them in red in your notes. Help. Save, counsel, provide wisdom, and an abundance of helpful insights. Do you think they delivered? They didn't deliver on one of these aspects that Job is pinpointing. They didn't do any of that. In fact, they did just the opposite of it to Job. Look at verse 5. The departed spirits tremble. Again, the NET Bible has a note. Means even the dead cannot escape God's terror. Yeah. The departed spirits tremble under the waters and their inhabitants. But we all see here how Job perceives the dominion and majesty of God here. This is huge. It really is. There's absolutely no one or anything that is not impacted by God's sovereignty, majesty, and dominion. That's the God we worship. It really depicts the universal dominion of God. There is nowhere God cannot impact. Not only in this whole creation, but beyond this creation. Because think back to last week with what Bildad had said in 25:1-3. And this was the true part of what he said. I'm going to read it quickly. 25:1-3, it says, "Then Bildad the Shuhite answered, 'Dominion and all belong to him who establishes peace in his heights. Is there any number to his troops, and upon whom does his light not rise?'" Wow. Again, we're still in a poetic dialogue. Yeah. So I would understand it all in that light. It's not that Job thought the dead were alive here in 26:4. Again, I would understand Job's sarcasm is continuing on here in 26. Job is declaring here that nothing they said to him was of any benefit to Job. Nothing. And boy, did they have a lot to say. Finally, they've shut up. They're on the sidelines now. Look at verse 6. "Naked is Sheol before him." And the him, that's God. "And Abaddon has no covering. He, God, stretches out the north over empty space and hangs the earth on nothing." What a picture. And Job talked about this place in chapter 10. I'm going to read it quickly. Chapter 10, verse 21 and 22 says, "Before I go, and I shall not return, to the land of darkness and deep shadow, the land of utter gloom as darkness itself, of deep shadow without order, and which shines as the darkness." Nothing is ever hidden from God. There is nowhere to hide from him. Absolutely nowhere. Not even the grave itself. And that's where they believe the dead actually ended up. We've been through it. So you mean they didn't believe you die and go to heaven then? Huh, interesting. Another lie. So do you think the motives of these friends of Job were very clear to God? You bet they were. You bet they were. Because again, we read it in 42:7. Job got it right. These guys didn't. Yeah. So God's dominion is over the earth, beneath the earth, in the grave, and below the ocean, and beyond the heavens. Does that cover everywhere? I think it does. Yeah. Pretty much nowhere else to go. Yeah. That we know of right now, anyway. Although we know Jesus, our great high priest, is way beyond this creation. Seated at the right-hand side of God in a heavenly tabernacle not made of this creation. Can you get your head around that? I find it really difficult. But we can try. So here in the coming references, here in the verses coming up, verse 8 and onwards, the he in 26, I would understand he is referring to God. We saw him and he in verses 6 and 7 as well. And it's interesting, there was a time when people thought the earth was held up by pillars. You know, it actually had a foundation of pillars. That's how it stayed up. And it's coming up again in verse 11. But look at verse 8. "He wraps up the waters in his clouds, and the clouds, and the cloud does not burst under them. He obscures the face of the full moon and spreads his cloud over it. He has inscribed a circle on the surface of the waters at the boundary of light and darkness." We can't even measure this stuff. It's incredible. Because remember in Genesis, the creation was made in the middle of an expanse of water. And it's just incredible. I mean, I'm going to read a section out of Psalms as it really shows the dominion and magnitude of God. Psalm 18, verses 11 to 15. Listen to this. He made darkness his hiding place, his canopy around him, darkness of waters, thick clouds of the skies. From the brightness before him passed his thick clouds, hailstones and coals of fire. The Lord also thundered in the heavens, and the Most High uttered his voice, hailstones and coals of fire. He sent out his arrows and scattered them, and lightning flashes in abundance and routed them. Then the channels of water appeared, and the foundations of the world were laid bare, at your rebuke, O Lord, at the blast of the breath of your nostrils. Wow, what a picture. Yeah. And in Genesis 1, 6 to 7, it also talks about this expanse of water. Then God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters. Have you got that picture? Go waters, then God makes an expanse in that water. And let it separate the waters from the waters. So I would understand that beyond this creation is water. How far? I have absolutely no idea. Yeah. Verse 7. God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And it was so. Wow. Verse 11 of 26. The pillars of heaven tremble and are amazed at his rebuke. So that could be referring to thunder right there. Verse 12, he quieted the sea with his power, and by his understanding he shattered Rahab. And Rahab is a great sea monster of the deep in ancient Eastern literature, as I understand it. Hey, we've got one in Scotland. Scotland's made a fortune out of the Loch Ness Monster. Don't knock it. Follow the money again. Yeah. Verse 13, by his breath the heavens are cleared, his hand has pierced the fleeing serpent. And I put the note from the NET Bible in there. The same Hebrew word may be translated as wind, breath, or spirit, depending on the context, where it talks about by his breath the heavens are cleared. The term serpent now is interesting. Again, the NET Bible says, here too is a reference to pagan views indirectly. The fleeing serpent was a description for Leviathan, whom the book will simply describe as an animal, but the pagans thought it to be a monster of the deep. See the same phrase in Isaiah 27:1, God's power over nature is associated with defeat of pagan gods. No extra charge for that. So, verse 14, behold, these are the fringes of his ways, and how faint a word we hear of him. But by his mighty thunder, who can understand? I'm going to read Nahum. You what? Nahum chapter 1, verse 5. You can just listen to this as we finish off here. Nahum chapter 1, verse 5 to 7. Mountains quake. And this really just to exemplify his absolute magnitude of his sovereignty. Mountains quake because of him, and the hills dissolve. Indeed, the earth is upheaved by his presence. The world and all the inhabitants in it. Who can stand before his indignation? Who can endure the burning of his anger? His wrath is poured out like fire, and the rocks are broken up by him. The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knows those who take refuge in him. So this chapter 26 has started out a whole six chapters of Job highlighting declaration of his righteousness. It's going to be a main part of it. And really trying to set these now silent friends absolutely straight on him being a blameless man. Really confronting their error and showing them that he himself was innocent the whole time. He's highlighting the case against him has been lost. Yeah, and he's come out of it all as the innocent one and not guilty. But we also have to see how Job is magnifying the whole sovereignty of God here. There's nothing outside of God's power, both in this world and beyond this world and creation. Got to catch that. Not to even mention the age to come. I haven't touched on that. When his creation will be destroyed. Yeah? And a new heaven and a new earth will be established by the very same God. Man, what a future. What a hope we all have. So we've got another five chapters of Job's rebuttal to go. Don't get too comfortable. Then Elihu turns up. Another six chapters of heated censuring from Elihu against all these guys, including Job. So you better fasten your seatbelt for that coming up. Yeah. So next time, Lord willing, we'll be into Job's continued statements supporting his whole case and his innocence, and again, God's sovereignty. So have a great week. Amen.